And I will tell you another thing. The Germans are our customers. They spend very good money in here. You get your priorities right.
Edith! I have solved the problem of the two British airmen. I use the razor from your bathroom.
Oh, Maria. How little I know you. What have you done with the bodies?
All I did was shave off their moustaches.
Oh, fantastic. That will fool the Germans completely.
Hello and welcome to the Wind Machine podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning and today I'm joined by the bratwurst to my pretzel, Mark Perkins.
Hi Danny, hi Eurovision listeners. Bratwurst, I'm a bit of a sausage fest, am I?
Yeah. Let's not go there.
No, let's go there.
I can be a bit salty at times. Makes sense, doesn't it? So, we've had a bit of an exciting time. Since our last proper podcast.
It's been a very Eurovision couple of weeks, hasn't it?
So first of all, we recorded our first three YouTube videos ever.
And they went gangbusters.
They went really well.
They went pretty good.
We did have one problem, though.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Now, you know us here at Wind Machine Podcast. We're very particular about doing things right. And this is why, at the end of every podcast, we do a legal announcement. Because we recognise that all artists should be paid. And we understand that you don't take what is not yours.
Correct.
So, we flew up to Sydney for the OGAE Australia ESC fan preview party. And on the day of the preview party, we got a copyright claim.
Yes, one of those infamous YouTube copyright claims.
For 20 seconds of footage.
Yep.
Which a lot of other reaction videos have been using.
Yes.
So, we were unlucky. And we are still in the process of disputing the claim because it's fair use.
Yes.
And we know that fair use is a slippery slope.
But if you're reviewing or critiquing, you know, just talking about a bit of music or video, then that is fair use.
Absolutely. So we came home and we edited a new version. It's the semi-final one video on YouTube. So we have two versions of that at the moment, just in case the original version gets taken down again, because it has been allowed. They took the block off, but we'll see what happens. So watch this space. But back to the good bits. So yes, we flew to Sydney and we also went to Melbourne for the 2018 preview parties held by ESC Fan OGAE Australia. And there was a special guest this year.
There was.
It was Slavko from Montenegro 2017. Now, I don't fangirl often. I think the last time I lost my crap was when I met Glenn Shorrock from Little River Band when I was about 10. But there is something amazing about Slavko.
He's just an awesome individual.
He has an air around him that is just so glorious that you want to just hang with the guy.
Exactly.
So he flew over with someone that a lot of you will know if you've been in Eurovision fandom for quite some time.
Yes, from ESC Insight, Lisa Jane Lewis.
Yes, Lisa Jane Lewis actually came over with Slavko as his UK manager. So it was nice to see some of the Sydney people, because, of course, we don't get up to Sydney that often.
No.
So we met up with old friends and made a new friend in Sebastian, who works for WeeWee Blogs.
Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, Sebastian. It was really quite weird because he came over and said hi to us.
Yeah.
How does that work?
How does that happen? We're not that big.
No, we're not famous at all.
Small little podcast.
We're just two idiots that sit in a booth every fortnight. I don't know what's going on. But hi, Sebastian, and thank you so much for being so lovely and friendly to us. And it's been great watching the WeeWee Blogs live streams from Lisbon. So, of course, you know, we've had Sebastian and we've had Robin
and Suzanne.
They've been doing all the, you know, the stuff that's been going on stage. And if you don't watch the rehearsal videos, that's totally fine. But we've seen some amazing stuff.
I mean, like Robin's drawings. I mean,
oh, Robin's drawings. Come on. She's got to open a gallery just for those drawings.
And the Tim Tams.
And the Tim Tams. Oh, God. Now I'm hooked on Tim Tams again.
Yes. Thanks, Sebastian.
Yeah, thanks, Sebastian. So then we went to the Melbourne party, which, of course, is home. Yes. And that was great because we got to, you know, hang out with Dale and Michael.
From Aussie Vision.
From Aussie Vision, who, as we're recording, are somewhere between somewhere and London.
Probably about to land in Lisbon. London.
No, yeah, they're in London. Right, they go to London first. But, yeah, God, I've got serious FOMO with the amount of people on my Facebook timeline who are either in Lisbon or just going there now. Yes, looking at you, Jamie, complaining about packing. Oh, it's so unfair this time of year.
We left behind.
But it's okay because we'll make our own fun in front of the telly.
That's right.
That's right. And, you know, if you're doing Eurovision parties and stuff, have fun. Make friends. The Eurovision fandom is pretty damn awesome.
I can't believe how many friends we've made over the last year and a bit.
I know.
It's insane.
We found our people.
That's right.
Now that we've crapped on for ages... In the last episode, we picked Germany out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two. We have...
Get Out Your Accordion with this track from 2014.
Null points. Oh, the shame of it all.
Super special American guest. That's Eurovision.
I can't stand still. There's too much swaying.
And Germany's winning song from 2010. So let's begin.
The Federal Republic of Germany is a federal parliamentary republic in central Western Europe, with Denmark bordering to the north, Poland and the Czech Republic to the east, Austria to the southeast, Switzerland to the southwest, France, Luxembourg and Belgium lie to the west, and the Netherlands is in the northwest. They're in the middle of all the good stuff. It includes 16 constituent states and covers an area of 357,000 square kilometres. With about 82 million inhabitants, Germany is one of the most populous member states of the European Union. Germany's capital and largest metropolis is Berlin. In the 21st century, Germany is a great power with a strong economy. It has the world's fourth largest economy by nominal GDP. It is a global leader in several industrial and technological sectors. It is both the world's third largest exporter and importer of goods. A developed country with high standard of living, it upholds a social security and universal healthcare system, environmental protection, and a tuition-free university education.
Imagine that. Oh.
Germany was a founding member of the European Economic Community in 1957 and the European Union in 1993. It is a part of the Schengen area and became a co-founder of the Eurozone in 1999. Known for its rich cultural history, Germany has been continuously the home of influential and successful artists, philosophers, musicians, sports people, scientists, engineers, and inventors.
The flag of Germany is a tricolour, like pretty much half of Europe.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Consisting of three equal horizontal bands displaying the national colours of Germany, black, red and gold. The flag was first adopted as the national flag of modern Germany in 1919, during the short-lived Weimar Republic, to 1933. Germany has two competing traditions of national colours, black, red, gold and black, white, red, which have played an important role in the modern history of Germany. The black-red-gold tricolour's first appearance anywhere in a German ethnicity sovereign state within what today comprises Germany occurred in 1778, and if that is not a run-on sentence, I don't know what is.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, and achieved prominence during the 1848 revolutions. The short-lived Frankfurt Parliament of 1848 to 1850 proposed the tricolour as a flag for a united and democratic German state under a constitutional monarchy. With the formation of the short-lived Weimar Republic after World War I, the tricolour was adopted as the national flag of Germany. 16 years later, following World War II, the tricolour was again designated as the flag of both the West and East German divided states in 1949. The two flags were identical until 1959, when the East German flag was augmented with a coat of arms of East Germany. Since reunification on the 3rd of October 1990, the black-red-gold tricolour has become the flag of a reunified Federal Republic of Germany.
German is the official and predominantly spoken language in Germany.
Schnell!
Schnell! Schnell! Achtung!
Achtung! Achtung. Mein Leben! Mein Leben!
Guten Tag!
Guten Tag! I keep thinking of Wolfenstein.
Oh, mein stop Leben. It! Standard German is a West Germanic language and is closely related to and classified alongside Low German, Dutch, Afrikaans, Frisian and English. It is one of the 24 official and working languages of the European Union and one of the three working languages of the European Commission. German is the most widely spoken first language in the European Union, with around 100 million native speakers. Recognised minority languages in Germany are Danish, Low German, Low Rhenish, Sorbian, that sounds good, doesn't it? Romani, North Frisian, and Slatalan Frisian. They are officially protected by the European Charter for Regional or Minority Languages. The most used immigrant languages are Turkish, which is very interesting when we get to Germany in Eurovision, Kurdish, Polish, the Balkan languages, and Russian. Germans are typically multilingual. 67% of German citizens claim to be able to communicate in at least one foreign language, and 27% in at least two. We have problems with English, you and I.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to learn Japanese. 56% of the population can speak English.
Well, German and English have a very similar structure in some ways.
I did German for 1 year in year six, and unfortunately I decided to pick Japanese, and that was probably a bad idea from year seven onwards. And I know you did Japanese for quite some time as well, and I'm doing it on Duolingo and thinking, what has possessed me to do this? I might try German again. But German actually made sense to me.
Yeah, it can flow quite well.
Yes.
What about Grimm? Remember the Grimm the TV show?
Yes, Grimm the TV show was very good. And we actually asked our friend Jens, who is from Germany and became an Aussie citizen only, a year ago?
Yep.
Well, if you don't know the show Grimm, it's basically based on the Brothers Grimm.
Mm.
So we have a Grimm that goes out and basically kills the monsters. And all of the monsters, of course, have German names. So when Grimm was still on, unfortunately, it's finished, and it was a brilliant series.
Mm.
I would often ask Jens, you know, is this the correct term for, you know, whatever? And he would say, yeah, that's pretty close. So that's good that they actually did their homework.
Yes.
To make sure that, you know, if you've got like a grizzly bear kind of character and use a German term for it, it's actually correct.
Mm.
Yeah, we did love Grimm. If you haven't watched Grimm and you like a bit of fantasy, it's quite good.
Yeah, and you get to learn a lot of German words.
You do. You probably learn more German from Grimm than you would with, say, Die Hard. Schnell, schnell,
schnell.
Yeah, you just yell schnell a lot. Anyway, we're going on. How about it's time for our first song?
Sure, Danny. From 2014, here's Is It Right by Eliza.
He's got a pen in his hand, a piece of paper staring back. He could write like a man, a novel life back on track. Maybe a drama or a poem, but still he doesn't know. The time is ticking in his ear, the holy silence disappears. Is it right or is it wrong? I can't go on, you can't go on. If you say yes or even no, you don't know how. To him, she tries to feel, she can't feel anything. But it's so hard to say goodbye when you know that it's right. So when it's all not what you thought, and a friendship is not enough, when you long to feel alive and take the chance to give it up, is it right or is it wrong? You can't go on. If you say yes or even no, you don't know how and where to go. Is it right or is it wrong? I can't go on. You can't go on. If you say yes or even no, you don't know how and where to go. I know it's not easy to decide to find your own. Can't go on, you can't go on.
Eliza is a German band from Berlin. The leader of the group is Elzbieta Ella Steinmetz. She was born in Ukraine, of course, in 1992 and is of mixed Polish and Ukrainian origin, as her mother comes from Poland and her father is from the Ukraine. The other members are Laura Zimmerman, born 1989, and Natalie Ploger, born 1985. They have released two albums. And the song came 18th in the final on 39 points.
We probably had more trouble getting down to a 5 than we have in a while.
True.
Because this was hard. This was hard.
Yeah, we had a bit of a fight over who was going to be the 5th song. Because we were on 6 for a while there.
This is the one that made it through.
Yep.
I think it's a good choice, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was your choice. But yeah.
Just because you wanted Ghost.
Oh.
So the official clip, we basically have the three ladies and they're all dressed kind of 50s-ish, aren't they?
Mm.
So it's kind of, you know, nice dresses that have got the, what do you call it, like the tulle underneath to make them sit out a little bit. Anyway, it's them and a mime.
Yeah, and the mime is acting out and miming the words from the song.
Yeah, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the mime did not make it to Eurovision.
I know. That would have been such a great thing.
That would have been really cool because, you know, sometimes you need a bit of a gimmick.
Mm.
A mime would have been kind of cool. So on the stage in 2014, we've got the three of them and we've got blue and yellow lighting and the words projected on the back. So you remember 2014 had a structure,
yeah,
and then also had LEDs behind that.
LEDs? That's a that's a foreign thing.
There's no LEDs in Lisbon unless you bring your own. And then we finish off with streamers. Now, come on. That's so damn festive. But I like this. And I have to say, Ella, the lead singer, does have really awesome hair. But yeah, she's got this kind of rockabilly 50s thing happening, which I'm always a bit of a fan because I don't wear a lot of dresses. But if I look at dresses, I tend to look at those type of dresses.
Yeah, I don't wear dresses either. But you know.
Yeah, I know.
Mm.
You'd look nice in a rockabilly 50s dress.
Thanks, I think. Anyway.
Here's Black Smoke by Anne-Sophie from 2015.
When you look at me, you know you're hard to read. Because the face I see is not the one I know. And when you call me baby, what's that supposed to mean?
Sophie Duremeyer. It's got a little hat on the U. Now, you know I hate those hats. Born 1990 in London, is a German singer and songwriter. At a young age, she and her family moved back to Germany and they settled in Hamburg while she attended school in North Wales. So she did the whole boarding school thing. Since the age of four, she has studied ballet. You can kind of know that. You can always tell a ballerina's body.
Oh, yeah.
Always. In 2010, she moved to New York City, one of our favourite cities in the world, and she attended the Lee Strasberg Theatre and Film Institute. Now, Lee Strasberg is pretty big. At the German national final, she came second to Andreas Kubert, who then declined to be Germany's entry in 2015.
Now, I don't get this. It's Eurovision.
But remember, a lot of people that do San Remo in Italy sometimes don't want to go to Eurovision. They just want to win San Remo.
But it's Eurovision.
Oh, I know.
It's like the best thing ever.
So she has also released two albums. Now.
Get
yourself comfortable. The song came last on nil points. While Germany and Austria both finished with no points, Austria is listed as finishing ahead of Germany due to the tiebreaker rule that favours the song performed earliest in the running order.
They were, unfortunately, the zeros of their time.
They certainly were. So we touched on the national final, and going back, I think she was quite a worthy second when you think about it.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
She's in a white coat. Now, we know that white does really good at Eurovision.
Tick.
She's got four backup singers, and there's black smoke on a white background on the back of the LED, which is very cool. At Eurovision, it's changed a little bit. Everyone's now suddenly in black.
Black, yes.
Which is lovely. And they have these really gigantic lamps, which give off this yellow light.
Yeah.
It's a bit like a Bond background. You know when you have like the start of the old Bond films when, you know, it would be like the circles and then Bond will turn shoot and then, you know, the blood will come down the street. That's exactly what it looked like to me. Did you think, because I know you watch a lot of Bond films, I sort of dip in and out, but did you think it felt a bit Bondish?
Yeah, a little bit. But I didn't see any blood pouring down any holes or anything like that.
No.
Which was kind of disappointing from my part.
That's when we got to the actual voting?
Yeah.
Because that was a bloodbath. Anyway, Anne-Sophie looks amazing in this kind of jumpsuit-y thing and high heels.
Mm-hmm.
She's a good-looking lady.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still confused why no one voted for this.
I voted for it.
Well, it wasn't enough, Mark.
Oh, man.
It wasn't enough. Yeah, look, sometimes, we say this every time. We tend to sort of go for the underdog.
We sure do, yes.
And someone has to come last. But did it have to be Anne-Sophie? And did it have to be the Makemakes?
I know. Come on, Burning Piano. Black
Not
Smoke.
Cool. Exactly.
Hey, there's a connection. Burning Piano, Black Smoke. What the heck?
There were some unhappy pyros that night.
I think so.
We figured it out. Yeah, yeah.
Conspiracy.
High five. Okay. Now, the history is not as terrible as we thought it was going to be. Now, I'm not talking about the content. I'm talking about the length.
The length. It's a very shortened version compared to last half dozen or so.
Yay!
I can hear the listeners now going, thank God.
Thank God I don't need to take a pee break in the middle. All right, go for it.
Go for it. The concept of Germany as a distinct region in Central Europe can be traced to Roman commander Julius Caesar, who referred to the unconquered area east of the Rhine as Germania, thus distinguishing it from Gaul, a.k.a. France, a.k.a. where Asterix and Obelix lived, which he had conquered, but was quite unsuccessful with this little village where Asterix lived.
Yes.
Sorry. I digress. The victory of the Germanic tribes in the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest in AD 9 prevented annexation by the Roman Empire, although the Roman provinces of Germania Superior and Germania Inferior were established along the Rhine. Following the fall of the Western Roman Empire, the Franks conquered the other West Germanic tribes. When the Frankish Empire was divided among Charlemagne's heirs in 843, the eastern part became East Francia, which we've alluded to a few times.
We have.
In previous podcasts. In 962, Otto I became the first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, the medieval German state. In the High Middle Ages, the regional dukes, princes, and bishops gained power at the expense of the emperors. Martin Luther led the Protestant Reformation against the Catholic Church after 1517 as the northern states became Protestant while the southern states remained Catholic. You and Mikey are waiting for me to stuff up with Protestantism, aren't you?
Let me just check. Oh, damn, I'm doing religion this time.
Ha! Suffer. The two parts of the Holy Roman Empire clashed in the 30 Years' War, 1618 to 1648, which was ruinous to the 20 million civilians living in both parts. The 30 Years' War brought tremendous destruction to Germany. More than one quarter of the population and one half of the male population in the German states were killed by that catastrophic war. 1648 marked the effective end of the Holy Roman Empire and the beginning of the modern nation-state system, with Germany divided into numerous independent states such as Prussia, Bavaria, Saxony, and Austria, which also controlled land outside of the area considered as Germany.
After the French Revolution and the Napoleonic Wars of 1803 to 1815, feudalism fell away and liberalism and nationalism clashed with reaction. The 1848 March Revolution failed. The Industrial Revolution modernized the German economy, led to the rapid growth of cities and to the emergence of the socialist movement in Germany. Prussia, with its capital, Berlin, grew in power. German universities became world-class centers for science and the humanities, while music and arts flourished. Oh, I love this time of history. The unification of Germany, excluding Austria and the German-speaking areas of Switzerland, was achieved under the leadership of Chancellor Otto von Bismarck with the formation of the German Empire in 1871, which solved the Kleindeutsche Losung. I'm so sorry. The small German solution, Germany without Austria, or the Grobdeutsche Losung, the Greater Germany solution, Germany with Austria, the former prevailing. The new Reichstag, an elected parliament, was only a limited role in imperial government. Germany joined forces with other powers in colonial expansion in Africa and the Pacific. Germany was the predominant power on the continent. By 1900, its rapidly expanding industrial economy passed Britain's, allowing a naval race and an aggressive foreign policy. Germany led the Central Powers in World War I, which, of course, if you don't know, is from 1914 to 1918, against France, Great Britain, Russia, and by 1917, they're always late, the United States. Defeated and partially occupied, Germany was forced to pay war reparations by the Treaty of Versailles and was stripped of its colonies as well as Polish areas and Alsace-Lorraine. The German Revolution of 1918 to 19 deposed the emperor and various kings and princes, leading to the establishment of the Weimar Republic, an unstable parliamentary democracy.
Now, the repercussions of World War I were significant and in a way led to World War II.
Of course.
Because Germany being absolutely hammered economically, they had no money for anything. Their people became, well, destitute, for want of a better word. So nationalism became a thing. You know, to reinvigorate Germany, to recreate, make Germany great again.
Ah, yes, yes.
So I remember a story that my dad told me many times over the years.
Now, your dad was a war buff.
Yes. And he also collected banknotes. And because of the economic devaluation of the Deutschmark, the valuation of notes became high. So you wouldn't be seeing things like one Deutschmark or 10 Deutschmark. You'd be seeing a million Deutschmark, 100 million Deutschmarks.
Whoa.
Notes. They'd be printed, but they'd be next to worthless.
Yeah.
All right. So there was this one story where I think it was like a couple of kids were carrying, you know, hundreds of millions of Deutschmarks in notes in a washing basket, right? Going grocery shopping or something. So they put the basket down, right? And you think, oh, all this money, you know, someone's going to steal it. Okay. No, the money wasn't stolen. When the kids came back, the basket was gone. The money was still there. That's how worthless Germany's currency was.
Are you sure it wasn't Polly coming and stealing the laundry basket?
Could have been.
You know she loves the laundry basket. Yeah.
So Germany, after World War One, were completely devastated by the reparations they had to make to the Allies.
What a great story.
Yeah. So by the early 1930s, the worldwide Great Depression hit Germany pretty hard as unemployment soared and people lost confidence in the government. And as I mentioned before, this gave rise to a certain nationalistic approach in people. In 1933, the Nazi Party under who else but Adolf Hitler came to power and quickly established a totalitarian regime. Political opponents were killed or imprisoned. Nazi Germany's foreign policy aimed to create a greater Germany, which consequently saw the remilitarization of the Rhineland in 1936, the annexing of Austria in the Anschluss, and parts of Czechoslovakia with the Munich Agreement in 1938. Although in 1939, Hitler annexed further territory of Czechoslovakia, and its invasion of Poland on the 1st of September 1939 initiated the Second World War. After forming a pact with the Soviet Union in 1939, Hitler and Stalin divided Eastern Europe, and we've mentioned that a couple of times, it's the Nazi-Soviet pact.
Oh, yeah.
After a phony war in spring 1940, the German Blitzkrieg swept Scandinavia, the Low Countries, and France, giving Germany control of nearly all of Western Europe. Hitler invaded the Soviet Union in June 1941, breaking the Nazi-Soviet pact.
Yeah, that wouldn't have, no. That's, you know, you went too hard, Adolf, come on.
Yeah, he was so paranoid, he thought, oh no, the Russians, oh, better do something about that, but that was his big mistake.
Yeah, that was a terrible mistake, mate.
You can't fight a war on two fronts, mate.
Nah.
Tough. In Germany, but predominantly in the German-occupied areas, the systematic genocide known as the Holocaust killed 6 million Jews, as well as 5 million others, including Poles, Romanis, Russian Soviets, Russian and non-Russian, and others. For those who believe the Holocaust didn't happen, get in the bloody sea.
Yeah, or actually go and see, because you can actually go see these sites. And my mum went.
Oh, yeah?
And she couldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
And we're not a Jewish family. Mm. It didn't matter, because what happened to those poor people
was...
It's still disgusting and horrific.
It's still the greatest war crime in the history of this planet.
Absolutely.
In 1942, the German invasion of the Soviet Union faltered, and after the United States had entered the war, Britain became the base for massive Anglo-American bombings of German cities. Germany fought the war on multiple fronts through 1942 to 44. However, following the Allied invasion of Normandy in June 1944... And my grandfather was there on day two, by the way.
Yeah.
The German army was pushed back on all fronts until the final collapse in May 1945. Under the occupation by the Allies, German territories were split up. Austria was again made a separate country, denazification took place, and the Cold War resulted in the division of the country into democratic West Germany and communist East Germany. Millions of ethnic Germans fled from communist areas into West Germany, which experienced rapid economic expansion and became the dominant economy in Western Europe. West Germany was rearmed in the 1950s under the auspices of NATO, but without access to nuclear weapons. The Franco-German friendship became the basis for the political integration of Western Europe in the European Union. In 1989, the Berlin Wall was destroyed, thanks solely to David Hasselhoff.
It was totally David Hasselhoff that did it.
The Soviet Union collapsed and East Germany was reunited with West Germany in 1990. And if you have a look on YouTube, Google, whatever, have a look at some of those videos. It's very touching.
Oh, it is. I remember it. Yeah. You'd remember it.
Remember
it was
it.
All over the news. And of course, you know, for us at that age, we were like, this is massive. Yeah. This is one of those where were you when
moments. Exactly. Seeing East German soldiers cross over and shake the hands of West German soldiers. It's a bit like what recently happened in North and South Korea when South Korea's president met with Kim Jong-un. Yeah, crossing the borders. It's very similar.
Yes, very similar.
In 1998 to 99, Germany was one of the founding countries of the Eurozone. Germany remains one of the economic powerhouses of Europe, contributing about one quarter of the Eurozone's annual gross domestic product. In the early 2010s, Germany played a critical role in trying to resolve the escalating Euro crisis, especially regarding Greece and other southern European nations. In the middle of this decade, well, basically in the last few years, the country has faced the European migrant crisis as the main receiver of asylum seekers from Syria and other troubled regions. So Germany has a heart.
I think there's some amazing videos on YouTube about modern Germany. And the war is not swept under the carpet.
No.
And it's taught in school. And, you know, our generation of Germans and, of course, you know, younger Germans, they're working on it.
Yeah.
They're working on... You can't fix the past, but...
You can make sure you don't repeat the past.
Exactly. So, you know, I would love to go to Germany. I'd absolutely love to go to Germany.
It's on my bucket
list.
Yeah,
it's totally bucket list. So for now, a little bit of religion. Upon its establishment in 1871, Germany was about two-thirds Protestant and one-third Roman Catholic, with a notable Jewish minority. Other faiths existed in the state, but never reached a demographic significance and cultural impact like these other three. Germany lost nearly all of its Jewish minority during the Holocaust. Religious makeup changed gradually in the decades following 1945, with West Germany becoming more religiously diversified through immigration and East Germany becoming overwhelmingly irreligious through state policies. It continues to diversify through the German reunification of 1990, with the accompanying substantial decline in religiosity, that's almost as good as Protestantism, throughout all of Germany, and contrasting increase of evangelical Protestants and Muslims. According to the 2011 German census, Christianity is the largest religion in Germany, claiming 69% of the total population. Relative to the whole population, 32% declared themselves as Protestants, including members of the Evangelical Church of Germany, and 31% declared themselves as Roman Catholics. Orthodox believers constituted 1%. Other religions accounted for at about 3%. Other religions comprising less than 1% in Germany's population are Buddhism, with 270,000 adherents, Judaism, with 200,000 adherents. Could you imagine that's such a small number, what they started with? And Hinduism, with around 100,000 adherents. So this is how war changes religion.
And the demographics of the people.
Yeah, exactly. Like everything changes. There's pre-war and there's post-war. And you compare the two and you can just see how people either died or scurried. And that's what you would do. You would scurry. We're watching The Handmaid's Tale at the moment, which is quite phenomenal and has a lot of religious content to it.
Yeah.
It's that scurrying away for freedom, be it of freedom of religion or just freedom of self. So, yeah, you'd always sort of watch that whole thing. I'd love for someone to do, I don't know whether or not they've done it, but a YouTube video with a graphic of how pre-war was and then to watch it all sort of move around post-war. It'd be quite interesting.
I think it's probably something like that.
From a religion base, I think that would be really quite interesting. Yeah. So we might have to dig that up. Hey, listeners, if you know of anything, let me know, because I love watching stats, and especially stats that move. They make me happy. So after all that excitement and sadness and stuff, let's go into something a little bit more upbeat.
From 2009, here's Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang by Alex Swings, Oscar Sings.
Hey, Miss Kiss, let us dance.
Mrs. Kiss, Kiss Bang, she's not a fool. Extraordinary and oh so cool. When I feel the touch of her sweet lips, I know this is a devil's kiss. She sets my soul on fire with no return. Ooh, baby, just burn, burn, burn. And I think we're like Mr. and Mrs. Right. So I'll give you my heart tonight. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, come let us sing. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, now let us swing. Shake your sweet, sweet, sweet little thing. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, come let us swing. Imagination feeds my hungry heart. Give me your love before we part. And I'm on the way of no return. Ooh, baby, just burn, burn, burn. And I think we're like Mr. and Mrs. Right. So I'll give you my heart tonight. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, come let us sing. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, now shake your sweet, sweet, sexy thing. Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, come let us sing.
Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang.
Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, now let us swing.
Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang.
You are my queen and I'm your king.
Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang, Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang.
Shake your sweet, sweet bang.
Alex Christensen, born 1967. Really?
I know. He's really well preserved.
Does he go to the same fountain of youth as Alexander Rybak?
I'm pretty sure he does.
Whew. Better known by his stage name, Jasper Fawkes, or Alex C., is a German dance music composer, producer, and DJ, generally known as The Face, and one of the founding members of U96.
I would say that's like a cool German band. I didn't look it up, to tell you the truth.
Joseph Oscar Lawyer, born 1979, is an American singer and Broadway musical theatre performer. They were joined on stage by Dieter Von Teese, an American burlesque dancer, model, and actress. The song came 20th in the final on 35 points.
Not only did they have one American ring in, they had two. You know, when we do this podcast and we try and find either a national final or an official clip, and sometimes the official clip is so awful, it takes your breath away.
Yep.
Let's talk about this one.
Oh, Ricky Martin, you ain't.
Alex, do up your shirt. There is just too much of Alex's chest in this. Now, you actually figured out that there was a storyline to this, and it obviously flew over my head because I was too busy going, Alex, do up your shirt. So what do you think is going on in this clip?
He's basically doing a bit of promotion. He's going throughout Europe performing in clubs.
And in a red car.
In a red car, yeah.
Of course, you know, full band and we've got dancers and all that stuff. It's all very cool. Thank goodness they went with something different for the Eurovision stage.
Yes, the live performance was 1,000 times better than the clip.
Now, Alex seems to have, you know how sometimes my motor skills fail on me and say, you know, I can't open something or whatever.
Mm.
Alex seems to have some fine motor skills issues because he can't do up buttons in a shirt.
He must be related to Matthew McConaughey as well.
So Alex, he's a pretty good looking man. And he's got eyebrows to die for. So he's in a black shirt that's kind of, you know, just open enough for the pecs. You know, you got to show the pecs off. And disco pants. Now, the only way I can describe this is, if you took a disco ball, unraveled it, and then wrapped it around someone's legs, that would be Alex.
Yes.
But yes, he's a very good looking man. So we have really gold staging, which is annoying because Alex's disco pants are silver, but let's not go there. We've got two dancers. We've got Alex at the back. So we've got a piano and all of that stuff happening at the back. And mid-stage, we have Ms. Dita Von Teese on a couch. It almost looks a little bit like that blow-up couch that we always laugh about from Doctor Who. She's kind of sensual. I wouldn't say sexual.
Yeah.
Sensual.
Sultry.
On that couch. And then, of course, she gets up and she dances with Alex. And it's all very, yay, Dita Von Teese. She is a phenomenal-looking woman.
Oh, my God. She doesn't age either.
She doesn't age either. Oh, what God is going on? But look, you know I love a good gimmick. This was a fantastic gimmick because else would be Miss Kiss, Kiss Bang?
Of course, of course.
Like, come on. Who else would you use?
Given the whole, you know, the feel of the song and the outfits and look towards a 20s and 30s vibe.
Yeah.
Who else personifies burlesque 20s, 30s?
Yep.
It's Dita.
Yep. It's very nice to see her. She's apparently a very nice and kind and intelligent lady.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I would really like to sit down. You know how you've got like a list of people that you'd like to have at a dinner party? She's on it.
Cool.
Yeah. So since Alex went for a bit of a travel in the woeful official clip for Miss Kiss Kiss Bang, let's talk a little bit about geography, climate and politics. Germany is also bordered by the North Sea and to the north, northeast, the Baltic Sea. With Switzerland and Austria, Germany also shares a border on the freshwater Lake Constance, which is the third largest lake in Central Europe. It is the seventh largest country by area in Europe and the 62nd largest in the world. Most of Germany has a temperate seasonal climate dominated by humid westerly winds. Oh, that'd be bad for my hair. The country is situated between the oceanic Western European and continental Eastern European climate. The climate is moderated by the North Atlantic Drift, the northern extension of the Gulf Stream. This warmer water affects the areas bordering the North Sea. Consequently, the northwest and north, the climate is oceanic. Germany gets an average of 789 millimetres of precipitation a year. I like saying precipitation. It sounds cooler than rain.
Mm.
And there is no consistent dry season. Winters are cool and summers tend to be warm. Temperatures can exceed 30 degrees. I'm so glad we're finally in autumn. The East has a more continental climate. Winters can be very cold and summers very warm, and longer dry periods can occur. Central and Southern Germany are transition regions, which can vary from moderately oceanic to continental. In addition to the maritime and continental climate that predominate over most of the country, the Alpine regions in the extreme south and to the lesser degree, some areas of central German uplands have a mountain climate with lower temperatures and more rain.
The German political system operates under a framework laid out in the 1949 constitutional document known as the Basic Law. They have one rule. Do not talk about German politics. The president is the head of state and invested primarily with representative responsibilities and powers. He's elected by the Federal Convention, an institution consisting of the members of the parliament and an equal number of state delegates. The second highest official in the German order of precedence is the president of the parliament, who is elected by the parliament and responsible for overseeing the daily sessions of the body. The third highest official and the head of the government is the Chancellor.
Which is Angela Merkel.
Merkel.
Is it Merkel or Merkel?
I think it's Merkel.
So she's Angela Merkel. The fact that she's Angela. She's not Angela. No, no.
She's Angela.
Angela.
Is it at 90 degrees or?
45,
yeah. The Chancellor is the head of government and exercises executive power similar to the role of a Prime Minister in other parliamentary democracies. Since 1949, the party system has been dominated by the Christian Democratic Union and the Social Democratic Party of Germany. So far, every Chancellor has been a member of one of those parties. And Angela has been the Chancellor since 2005.
Ooh.
Germany's military is organised into Army and Special Forces, Navy, Air Force, Bundeswehr Joint Medical Service and Joint Support Service branches. In absolute terms, German military expenditure is the ninth highest in the world. As of 2017, the military employed roughly 178,000 service members, including about 9,000 volunteers. Reservists are available to the armed forces and participate in defence exercises and deployments abroad. Since 2001, women may serve in all functions of service without restriction. Until 2011, military service was compulsory for men at age 18, and conscripts served six-month tours of duty. Conscientious objectors could instead opt for an equal length of civilian service or a six-year commitment to voluntary emergency services like a fire department or the Red Cross.
I would do the latter.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cool that you have an option if you don't want to join. And do your, you know, if you didn't want to do your thing, you could go and do the Red Cross. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's very nice of you, Germany. Here's a nice song. And this, we didn't fight over at all.
No.
We both agreed.
Yeah, pretty much.
From 2012, here's Standing Still by Roman Loeb.
Guess we knew this was coming on, cause you're already gone in my head. You can tell me that I'm wrong, that you're staying with me instead. When winter's come along and summer's dead and gone, is there anything left here to say? I can put my arms around the emptiness I found and find a way to make you stay. But I'm standing still. I'm standing still as you leave me now. I'm standing still as you walk now. Yeah, I'm just standing still. Never thought I'd be this strong, the pieces of me break so easy. What I thought would be the
'cause I'm standing still.
Now, I'm hoping it's Loeb because it's written as Lob, and I really don't want to call him Roman Lob because it sounds a little bit like a tennis move.
Lob.
Well, Roman Loeb, or Lob, was born in 1990 and is a German recording artist. He took part in the German version of Idol and also attempted to represent Germany in 2008 as part of the boy band G12P. Now, what do you think G12P stands for?
No idea.
Germany 12 points.
Of course.
Isn't that brilliant? The song came eighth in the final on 110 points. There's something nice about Roman.
He's Freddie before Freddie was Freddie.
Absolutely. He was before Freddie. The official clip is black and white. And of course, I realised while watching this official clip is that Roman could be a distant cousin of Jensen Ackles from Supernatural.
Yes.
Because he wears a heck of a lot of flannel. But see, the good thing is, you look at flannel, right? Look at flannel from an Australian perspective. You think you're...
Bogan, yeah.
Yeah. On Roman, it looks really good.
Mm.
Mm. So does double earrings and a beanie. They look really good on him.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't carry that off.
No.
At Eurovision, he's still pretty much in his kind of... Yobbo Bogan uniform, but carrying it off beautifully.
Uh-huh.
Kind of cargo pants and a jacket and a t-shirt and all that stuff. Beanie, of course, must have had a bad hair day. And he's joined on stage with a piano and band with two guitars and drums. His performance was perfect.
It was flawless.
This is why he came eighth.
Yeah.
It was... awesome. And I was transfixed, not because he reminds me of Jensen Ackles. Like,
no, not at all.
He's a bit of all right. And yes, we did look up that he does have German ancestry. So we're not completely nuts right now.
No.
No. But yes, he's quite lovely, really. A bit young for me, but I could still look, right?
Of course you can.
Sure.
As long as I can look at the next
totally. Since... this podcast is kind of actually about Eurovision.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, let's talk about Germany in Eurovision.
Sure. Germany has officially participated in every Eurovision Song Contest since its beginning in 1956.
Wow.
Except in 1996, when its entry did not qualify past the audio-only pre-selection round and consequently was not seen in the broadcast final, and does not count as one of Germany's 61 appearances.
Ooh, drama.
Contentious. Mm. No other country has been represented as many times. Before German reunification in 1990, it occasionally was represented as West Germany, representing the Federal Republic of Germany. East Germany, the German Democratic Republic, did not compete in the Eurovision Song Contest, but instead in the Intervision Song Contest. Germany has won two contests in 1982 and 2010. Germany's first win in 1982 was when Nicole won with the song Ein bisschen Frieden. The second German entry came 28 years later at the 2010 contest when Lena won with Satellite. Germany have finished second 4 times, third 5 times for a total of 11 top 3 placements. Katja Epstein, who finished third in 1970 and 1971, and then second in 1980, is the only performer to have made the top 3 on 3 occasions, but never won. There's stats for you.
That's good stats.
Germany has finished last on 7 occasions, receiving null points in 1964, 1965, and 2015.
Boo.
Germany, along with the United Kingdom, Italy, France, and Spain, is one of the big 5 countries that are automatically qualified to the final, regardless of the placing. This is due to being the largest financial contributors to the contest and the European Broadcasting Union. Since 1996, ARD consortium member NDR has been responsible for Germany's participation in the contest. Although German contestants have had varied levels of success, public interest remains high and the contest is one of the most watched events every year.
So it should be.
Yes. Since 2000, Germany has performed once in German, a mix of German and English twice, English and Turkish once, and English only 14 times. Germany usually receives its top points from Spain, Portugal, and the United Kingdom, and usually give their top points to Sweden, the United Kingdom, and Turkey.
The Turkish connection, see? Mm. I said it would come back. So yeah, they kind of liked Turkey. Germany and Turkey had a bit of a thing happening.
Yeah.
Swapping points and stuff. Yeah. Speaking of attractive people, from 2010, here's Satellite by Lena.
I went everywhere for you. I even did my hair for you. I bought new underwear, they blew, and I wore them just the other day. Love, you know I fight for you. I left on the porch light for you. Whether you are sweet or cool, I'm gonna love you either way. Love, oh love, I gotta tell you how I feel about you. Cause I, oh I, can go a minute without your love. Like a satellite, I'm in orbit all the way around you. And I would fall out into the night, can go a minute without your love. I save the best I have for you. You sometimes make me sad and blue. Wouldn't have it any other way. Love, my aim is straight and true. Cupid's arrow is just for you. I even painted my toe nails for you. I did it just the other day. Love, oh love, I gotta tell you how I feel about you. Cause I, oh I, can go a minute without your love. Cupid's arrows just for you. I even painted my toenails for you. I did it just the other day. Love, oh love, I gotta tell you how I feel about you. Cause I, oh I, can go a minute without your love. Like a satellite, I'm in orbit all the way around you. And I would fall out into the night, can go a minute without your love.
Johanna Therese Maya Landrut. That's fantastic. Born 1991, is a German singer-songwriter. She grew up as an only child and started taking dancing lessons from the age of 5, initially doing ballet and later practicing modern styles, including hip-hop and jazz dance. Lena grew fond of singing and appeared as an extra in a number of German television series, although she never received any formal acting or vocal training. That's pretty cool. After winning the contest in 2010, she returned in 2011 to represent Germany and came 10th with the song Taken by a Stranger. Lena also performed as part of the interval act in 2012. Satellite won the contest on 246 points.
Yay!
We always have a bit of a laugh when listening to this song because we're not exactly sure what Lena's accent is.
Any other day?
She sounds almost really Aussie.
I know,
song,
it's,
but it's quite
bizarre.
Bang.
So it's a favourite of ours when we go karaoke.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I sing it around the kitchen when you're not here.
Oh, okay.
I know. But, you know, weird. The official clip, to me, I've written down Inside Gravitron. Do you remember the Gravitron at the Melbourne show?
Yes.
And it was basically like a giant cylinder. And then you go so fast that you get stuck to the sides.
Mm.
It looked like the Gravitron.
Well, yes, but I had written down that the video clip itself looked like it was filmed at Eurovision. It was filmed at a Eurovision type stage.
It did have very pretty lights inside the Gravitron, for sure. Blue strobe lights. We like that. At Eurovision, it's really quite simple, let's be honest. Mm. There's no real bells and whistles because she has enough charisma to carry.
Yeah.
She kind of reminds me of 90s power dressing.
Mm.
Now, you won't get this because you definitely weren't a female in the 90s, but I was.
Really?
Oh, yeah, okay. I was.
Good to know, yeah.
She's got the little black dress on, with the black tights, the black shoes, and the black choker. Pretty much sure I had all of them in my wardrobe in 1990. Mind you, I didn't look as good in all of that.
Oh, stop it.
You know I don't do dresses. I've got knobbly knees. The staging is pretty much just blue and her with 4 backup singers that are all dressed in black. That is it.
Mm.
Sometimes you don't have to throw the kitchen sink.
No.
If you've got a really strong song and a strong singer. And of course, it helps if the singer is gorgeous and charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of people, I know even Robin said the other night on the Wee Wee Blogs live feed that she actually preferred Turkey to win.
Oh, yeah.
In 2010, which, of course, we had in our Turkish episode. Manga.
They were great.
Satellite, I think, has become one of those go-to songs, say, if you're having a Eurovision party or something.
Mm.
Everyone will get up and sing to it.
Of course.
Because it's just one of those iconic Eurovision songs that just happened to be a winner.
Hmm.
I think if it didn't win, people still would have loved it anyway.
Yeah.
And I do like Taken by a Stranger, but the problem is when we have returning acts, we don't know whether or not we should do the other song that they've done. Like, we can't do, like, Valentina like we did for San Marino. That was ridiculous. there was so much Valentina. But, yeah, I still think that song, it's completely different.
Yeah.
It's quite dark compared to Satellite, which is very boppy. But I think both of them are fantastic. And she did release a song, I think, 18 months ago that they've been playing on ESC Radio.
Yeah.
And it's about a daughter's relationship with her father. And, oh, my God, it makes me cry every time. if you don't, I don't know. I can't remember because I didn't write it down and my brain is like mash spud at the moment. But look it up and have a listen because it's a beautiful song. We've come to the end.
The end of another episode of Wind Machine Podcast.
So this is our last one before Eurovision. And you know what that means? Our next episode, whoever we draw out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, we can use a 2018 song.
I know.
Like, that's huge. Next episode will be based on whichever country we draw out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom.
We have 8 more to go.
I know! All countries with 5 songs or more from 2000 onwards get a turn. Oh, it's so exciting. We're getting to the end. I can't handle it.
Oh, my God.
Can I have a drum roll, please? Yuna Lassand. Do we have a valid result?
Yes, Danny, yeah, we do. Could you announce the winner, please?
I know you've been very busy with all this Eurovision stuff, but it's really nice that you take the time out to come and be on Wind Machine Podcast. Like, we really do appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Danny, yes. Now, don't mind me, I have to fly back to Lisbon tonight.
Episode 40.
40.
Which is just redonk. It is redonkulous. 40. That is just nuts. Anyway, episode 40 of the Wind Machine Podcast. We're going to Malta.
I think there's a good chance to play our first 2018 song.
Oh, I would say so. I would say so. If you haven't been following 2018. If you're one of those people that just sort of watches on the night and stuff like that, you know, that's totally cool. But we do the full ridiculous rehearsal stuff and gotta say, Malta 2018.
Yeah.
That's staging. Also has a very strong message about mental health.
Yes.
Which I really appreciate since I probably spent the whole week in my pajamas. It was good for me though. I needed some downtime before Eurovision, of course.
That's right. Today we are recording this on May the 4th. Be with you. Star Wars Day. So that means we're only a few days from the actual contest. We've been busily watching the rehearsals, thanks once again to WeeWeeBlog's live stream. And we are so excited.
Oh, so excited. Now, don't forget, Australians, SBS have changed how we actually watch the replays this year. So the first semi-final will be Wednesday morning and the replay will be Wednesday night. It does get replayed during the week again on SBS2 if you miss it, but don't miss it. Don't be silly. And then, of course, semi-final one is Friday morning and semi-final two is on Friday morning, which is the one that Jess Malboy is in. And then it's the replay
on Friday
will be on the Friday night.
Not Saturday night.
Not Saturday night. This is a way of kind of eliminating the spoilers aspect, which is really hard. If you don't do the live performances, you'll turn on a radio or you'll accidentally turn on a television and someone will be talking about Eurovision. Of course, Sunday is still the same. So Sunday morning at 5 a.m. and then I think it's 7:30. Sunday night.
Yep.
But there's also some specials on SBS this week as well. So make sure that you check them out. I think there's a special on the Saturday night, yeah, as far as I know.
And I think they're replaying the top 40 from last year.
All good stuff. Yeah, yeah, I like that. So, yeah, make sure that, you know, if you want to really dive into Eurovision, dive in deep. Before we finish, may I have the legal announcement, please?
We at Wind Machine Podcast have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners or SBS. We are just fans.
So, straight after Eurovision, in that kind of weird week of despair, we will be recording our post-Eurovision recap like we did last year.
Yes.
So that'll be another supplemental that'll come up. And then after that is done, we will be doing episode 40. So if you're really desperate for Malta, hang tight because we'll get there. But we have to do that. And then probably in the end of May, early June, we may have some certain gentlemen at our house And we're going to be doing a Wind Machine podcast crossover with Aussie Vision.
Dun, yay! Dun, dun!
Since they're on the ground and they got fan accreditation and all this amazing stuff, we're actually going to have them over for an interview. So that'll be another supplemental, but that'll be coming up. Plus, we're in the works for something for Wednesday night after Eurovision, but we can't tell you exactly yet because it's not completely organised. But check our social medias.
And there may be some more YouTube videos in the near future. Just watch this space.
If they feature Polly, they might get more views, apparently.
Yes.
People like our fluffy cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other two are a bit too camera shy. I've been Danny Tregoning, and you can find me on Twitter, DanieTreg.
And I'm Mark Perkins. You can find me on Twitter at MarkPerkinsVO.
You can keep up with us during Eurovision season at WinMachinePod on Twitter.
With the hashtag SBS Eurovision and hashtag Eurovision and hashtag Eurovision 2018.
And hashtag All Aboard. Don't forget to use All Aboard, because the EBU has actually asked that we all use hashtag All Aboard.
All Aboard!
All Aboard!
Don't forget to like us on Facebook.
We're on everything, and Mark's still doing the SoundCloudy stuff, which thank you everyone for giving us amazing listens on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
That's been phenomenal. We're not going to top that again.
No.
We've hit our peak. That's it.
We reached double figures, you know, that's pretty good. We might get triple figures, you never know.
Well, we have on YouTube, yay!
Yeah.
But yeah, you can find us wherever you listen to good podcasts and average ones and ours.
And don't forget to look at our website, windmachinepodcast.com.
So we'll say 2 weeks-ish for Malta.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh, maybe a bit longer, actually.
Oh, we'll see what happens. Anyway, if you want to ask us questions and so forth, you know where to find us. Until then.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Auf Wiedersehen.